It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Well, here we are. Welcome to the show. And, well, we've got some stuff to talk about, Scott. Let's get to it, Lisa.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
And David. So, okay, Scott. Yeah, of course. And David, you're going to talk and then I'm going to comment, which I love to do. And our listeners just love my commentary. It's insightful. And I love to translate all that good stuff and tell you what they don't tell you in the media and the newspaper. And, we don't always get the whole story. So that's our job.
Well, here's the whole story.
All right. I want to hear it.
The Thursday's market was another good, just sort of a sneaking up on it type of market. The Dow didn't quite close north of that 13,000 level that we had talked about earlier in the week, but it was up 46 points, closed at 12,985.
I love it. I mean, yeah, God, I'll take those. Back when we saw those massive gains that people always hearken back and think of in the 90s, I remember there being these 50 to 100-point days, and the market just crept up, and it just continued to build, and it's a beautiful thing. Don't wish for 500-point gain days. Hope for those 50s. Those 50s will do you just well.
Yep,
just fine.
I'm with you. S&P up 6 points. NASDAQ up 23 points. That's a good number for the NASDAQ. They're coming off a few days of loss. Gold up 10. Again, up with the gold. It's 1781, sneaking back up to 18. And oil, when I say oil, I mean West Texas Intermediate oil, up $1.85 to 108.
You know, we have to do a show talking about the different types of oil, whether it's sweet, it's light, all that stuff.
Brent, West Texas, we could do the whole show. But, you know, we've been talking about decoupling from Europe. Well, in the last 3 days, Spain, Portugal, Italy, Germany, all down more than 2%. Just in the last 3 days, S&P up 0.3%.
That's interesting.
I think that's terrific.
It's terrific that we're decoupled, that we're not, you know, having our boxcar tied to the back of their train, because we want that to be unhitched and for them to be able to do whatever they're going to do and let us do our thing in terms of our markets. But, you know, it is a global market. We are affected by what happens in Europe, but right now our economy has enough momentum, self-determining momentum, that we're not seeing the direct effect of that right away.
Yeah, I think it's good that we're standing on our own merits. And you know, it's important in a diversified portfolio, which I know you want to talk about today, to have European exposure. So I'm not wishing them ill, but I am happy that our markets are moving on their own merits.
Yeah, that's really the key.
Speaking of domestic momentum on the economic front, claims for unemployment benefits unchanged, announced today at 351,000. Economists had expected increase to 354,000. Now, that 351,000 might not sound right to you, because last week it was 348,000, and now I'm saying it's unchanged. They revised the number from last week.
You know, that's pretty. I would like to be able to do that. That would be convenient to be able to do that in life. Say, you know, dear, I told you I was going to be home at 6, and I got home at 6:30. I'm going to revise the time that I was going to be able to arrive to 6:30, so I'm on time.
Well, here's another trick you can use. In the survey data, they had to estimate 3 states, including California. So, you know, we're talking about very, very small. 1,000 people here and there is not that much. So if you're writing out the estimate for California and you want the number to be unchanged – Yeah, you just estimate a little unchanged.
Close enough.
It's close enough.
Well, it's you mentioned the current report, and the everybody's excited about the weekly. Looking at the claims, they're holding steady at a four-year low, and what they're talking about is the average for the, is it a four-week moving average, which is where you really can get a trend.
Yes, it takes the volatility out.
And that's down to 359. So, now again, for our listeners, that's 359,000 of people who are applying.
Initial claims.
Initial claim, first-time claim for unemployment.
Yeah, there are, however, still 7.5 million people claiming unemployment benefits, total on the unemployment rolls, 7.5 million people, almost 24 million Americans either out of work or underemployed.
Not good.
It's a lot. It's a lot of.
So about half that number are unemployed and half are underemployed.
Underemployed, meaning, that's right.
Meaning they, well, and I actually applaud those 12 million people.
Yeah.
Because they don't just sit and say, well, I guess I can't find a job that suits, that is to my, you know, to my skill or whatever it is. And they take a job that's less than what they're, I ran into a guy buying sunglasses at the mall. And he, I got to talking to him a little bit, and he said, well, you know, I'm getting ready to leave. I'm not going to be here maybe the next time you come in. I said, what's going on? He goes, well, I've got a job. He had worked in the technology, IT, and he got laid off, and he got a job at the sunglass place, and now he's going back to work in the technology field. So yeah. I applaud every single person that does that, because that's what America's all about. And to learn more about what America's all about, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Break it down. I like it. All right, Scott, you got some more news?
Here's a Finglish word we can break down into English. Recession. European Union expects a recession in 2012. Last quarter, the economy shrank by 0.3%. This quarter expected to shrink another 0.3%.
This is the second or third time in 3 years, right?
Yes. This will be their second recession in 3 years.
Okay. Well, that was what everybody was worried about last year. You know, we talk about what happens in the markets in 2011 and ended up being down about a half a point. Or 0.4%, but there were some moments there where we really were staring down the barrel of another recession, and we squeaked by.
Yeah, they don't have that benefit. You know, they're implementing these austerity plans, which they absolutely have to do, hinder growth. It's just something they're going to have to deal with for a while.
Well, how did we miss the bullet? And they
well, we haven't got to the point that we're implementing as much austerity as.
We had the capital, we had the backing, we had the funding, we had the ability to print more money.
Yeah, as of right now, but I mean, you know, at some point, if we have to employ austerity, our economy will start to shrink because the government won't be producing any more GDP and. You know, there won't be as much money to spend and there won't be as many jobs.
You know, that's a good point, Scott. The government does not contribute to GDP. They really just are redistributing
yes.
or redeploying the money.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if they didn't take the say, just the $2 trillion in taxes they take every year, where would that be? It would be in the economy.
Yeah, it would be circulating.
Spent. And or saved, and if it's saved, doesn't mean it's put in a tin cup.
And if it's spent, it's multiplying.
Exactly. So it multiplies if it's spent. It is affects the economy if it's saved. People hire professional money managers. They put it in the bank where the banks earn interest, or they loan that money out. So when we talk about our economy being a $15 trillion economy and the government's $3 trillion and the rest of it is $12 trillion, well, we really have. The consumers really make up all of the economy.
Right.
The people make up the economy.
So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on what is going on in Europe. The short-term acute threat of a Greek default is behind us. But I will tell you that in the portfolios that we manage, we are underweighting European, and we're starting to overweight domestic. And we've been placing those trades a little bit this week.
Good point. We just met with we call them prospective clients that I met with just yesterday, and they were heavy in Europe when we did our analysis. And so our recommendations, right in line with what you're saying, Scott, is that we're pulling back significantly on Europe. We're still keeping some of a presence there, but I told them we want to keep some money overseas, 20-30% overseas. We're still going to have the bulk of the investment portfolio that's in the stock market to be dominated by the United States and Canada, which is mostly United States. But overseas, you know, let's take that and slice it up 8 to 10 different ways. Australia, China, Japan,
yeah,
all these other countries that can have, United Kingdom, have an allocation, not all in developed Europe, which is Germany, France, and the like.
Right. So for us, we already have our portfolios pretty well in place. We have the hard structure in place, and we're talking about subtle changes. But if you have portfolios with big overweight or underweight exposures like that, it's important to get them taken care of.
Do you really think the Greeks are done? That Greece is... They're good.
I don't see any way. The only way for them to get out of their mess is to grow. I don't see any way for them to grow if they have to continue to hack and slash and borrow.
How do they grow? I mean, how do they make their country create more jobs?
They really have to start from scratch. And they can't start from scratch until they reset and default.
It's such a perfect way of describing it, because I was just, as we were talking about, I was just thinking of what would a business do if a business was saddled with an incredible amount of debt. It's trying to figure out, how do we grow and move the company forward? And that's when companies file for Chapter 11.
Yep, you get a break from the debt. And
they
take
the protection of bankruptcy and they reorganize. And we've seen many corporations do that in the United States. Look at General Motors.
Yeah.
They went through this bankruptcy process. They got a loan from the government. The government took a partial interest in the company. They own some of General Motors stock. And through that whole process, now they are producing just gobs of profit.
Yeah, so I think that's what it's going to take for Greece. And also in corporate news today, a fair amount of interesting pieces of corporate news. A lot of retailers announced earnings on Thursday. Target beat expectations. Kohl's fell short. Sears announced that they are just continuing to struggle, but they are going to actually sell 11 stores, which is pretty big news, because their big asset is their real estate. And they're going to go through a rights offering. They're going to raise $400 or $500 million. Procter & Gamble announced they are going to try to cut $10 billion in costs by fiscal 2016. Unfortunately, that is going to include a layoff of about 6,000 non-manufacturing jobs.
Okay. Very good. Well, let's take a quick break, come back, talk more about what's happening in the markets and the world.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 15 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
Okay, we're back, and we're talking about some of the things that are happening. You know, we got to talk about Apple.
Shareholder meeting on Thursday, started Thursday. New CEO's first shareholder meeting. Everybody wanted them to say, here's what we're going to do with the cash. And they said, we're thinking about it.
Hey, $100 billion in cash for Apple. Everybody wants to know when they're going to get their slice of apple pie.
That's right.
Take some ice cream with mine. I love apple pie. Vanilla ice cream. That's a good Southern favorite.
They're doting on it.
They are. Well, they're going to figure something out. Now, everybody's got different opinions about what Apple should do with their surplus of cash. The CEO of Apple even admits they don't need that much cash. You know what I think? Here's my opinion. I don't think they should do a dividend. I don't think if they do, it should be a reoccurring dividend. But I think what they ought to do is take that money and do more of what they do, which is take it, innovate, buy other companies, either go up the food chain, down the food chain, diversify. Probably makes the most sense for them to buy suppliers, to buy raw goods, just to completely vertically integrate. That's the fancy business school description of what they can do, is to buy the folks that make the chips, buy the folks that make their iPod cases, buy those assembly components, and become more, and reduce, by doing that, reduce their cost structure.
Well, and they've already done that on the going up the scale, up the vertical scale, by building all those stores. What kind of manufacturer builds a dedicated store like that with nothing in it but their own product?
Exactly. There's my point. So they've done it on the district, going from the production to the customer.
Right.
And now they need to go the other direction and buy suppliers.
Yeah, the distribution is spot on at
if
Apple.
If I was the CEO of Apple, I'd buy all the suppliers I needed and basically have complete control from start to finish.
Well, and they even have done that too in some instances. They bought the software company that produced the original Siri, so they have done some of that. Although I'll tell you, as an Apple iPhone 4S user, Siri has a long way to go.
Siri?
Yes.
Yeah, Siri, she's got an attitude, but she doesn't necessarily give you what you want. And we're talking about the voice-activated, semi-artificial intelligent. Not really, but she's trying.
Yes, she is trying. I'll give her that.
Well, all right. And speaking of trying, the Federal Reserve, again, our policy monetary folks that try to steer the economic stimulus and make sure we stay out of recessions but don't have a bunch of inflation. There's a little bit of a debate on whether or not we need another round of stimulus, what's called this quantitative easing, QE3, which is where they stimulate the economy by buying more mortgage-backed bonds. And there's a growing trend or discussion that they don't think they're going to need to do it, which is good in that it means that the economy's growing.
Yeah, I watched an interview this morning with Dallas Fed Bank Chairman Richard Fisher. He said he wasn't so sure we needed the second one, but we definitely don't need the third one.
I like that. I like the sound of that because I know the market always wants more stimulus, but
hawkish. Now he's the only person on the Federal Open Market Committee who has ever managed money.
So he's the only one that's actually ever done it.
He's the only one that really understands the impact on the stock market.
Well, you know how I feel about that, Scott. I read these articles and I hear things that are written, and it's from a no offense, but it's written by a journalist or a reporter who doesn't really do that.
Yeah.
And they're telling you what to do with your money. And I'm like, you know, it'd be nice if somebody actually wrote an article that knows what to do and they do it for a living. And so anyway, that's
Yeah, the Fed should be more than an academic exercise, certainly. And although I think our current chairman has really done a terrific job in some pretty difficult times.
Well, I think he saved us, if you ask me.
Yeah,
I know different people have different thoughts about that. They don't like the fact that we're in a low interest rate environment. He's made it clear we're not going to raise – he's not raising interest rates for at least through 2014. It's killing retirees and people that have CDs and savers. But right now, those folks need to be looking – if that's you, ladies and gentlemen, you need to be looking at alternatives. You need to sit down with a planner and say, what else can I do besides this lousy 1% five-year CD?
Yeah, because the guy that controls the interest rates has said, I'm not raising them.
So what are you going to do about it? Don't sit there and say, well, I guess I'll just take the renewal on my five-year CD at 1%. That's horrible. You are guaranteeing yourself you're going to lose money for the next 5 years because inflation is going to eat up all of that interest and then some, and you'll have less than you started with after 5 years when you adjust for inflation. So you need to get in to a financial planner's office and have them help you figure out what else you can do, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That's what you need to do. I like that. All right. Well, and speaking of low rates, if you're thinking about refinancing, I think you need to get on the stick.
Yeah, they popped up a little bit.
Rates are coming back up a little bit. 30-year loan rose to just under 4%. They'd gotten all the way down to, what, 3.5? They were a lot lower. So you're debating on whether you want to do something with refinancing. Now's the time to do it. 80% of mortgage applications are refis.
Yeah.
So it's a very popular thing to do. And another popular thing that we have to do is take a quick break. We will be right back.
80.
30.
50.
Every mile brings us closer.
25.
Every mile in a city near you.
75.
Help us stop diabetes.
100.
Join the Tour de Cure.
60.
Register to ride.
36.
Or sponsor a rider.
50.
Call 1-888-DIABETES or visit us online at diabetes.org/tour. How many miles will you ride?
25.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on West Channel 2.
Watch that TV show. That's a great thing. And here's the good news. I get better, okay? It's a challenge to do TV, and I found it, it's a lot. And the good news, though, if you do watch the show regularly, you'll see that it gets better, and we hit some very interesting topics, and we break it down. Now, I got to talk about this, Scott. I'm glad you stayed. Drilling. Drill, baby, drill.
Right.
Okay? President spoke and said, drilling is a bumper sticker.
It's not a policy. Right.
And he said, American people aren't stupid. Well, maybe I'm just not as smart as he is, because for me, drill, baby, drill that works, because we have to get energy independent. We're already interdependent. All this craziness and junk we have to deal with in the Middle East, we got to worry about this one, we got to worry about that one, all this. It's about keeping stability. It'd be nice if somebody else had to help police that besides us, and if we could just get more energy independent. So I think it is a bumper sticker, Mr. President. I think it's something that we should succinctly, you know, I can't put a 15-page document strapped or taped to the back of my truck, you know, so drill, baby, drill. Whatever we got to do, but we got to do something, because it's just crazy. We have enough resources. We talked about on the break, Scott. I mean, we got stuff in the ground all over the place,
yeah,
right?
And the technology is getting better and better and better to get it out.
And I'd like to see that pipeline coming from Canada.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And the natural gas, all this stuff. So, and you know what else I think we should do? This is just my opinion. I bet other people agree. How about some more nuclear plants? Okay? We've got some pretty good ones. We got about 100 of them, and with the technology that we have, I think we could increase that, and that would reduce our energy dependence even further. All right. What else we got here? Anything else on your list over there, Scott?
You want to talk about measurements of the market?
Oh, yeah, we got to do that. This is good stuff, folks. Listen to this. Scott and I had a meeting with one of our clients, and it got us thinking. A lot of people, we were having a conversation about how to measure performance and looking at the market and looking how your investment portfolio should be managed and how well you're doing. And one of the things that sometimes, well, we've concluded, Scott and I have, we've held a vote, and we have concluded that the financial industry does not do a good job of setting investor expectation, because so much of the talk about how are things going or about what?
S&P.
And the Dow.
And the Dow, even worse.
Even
Dow,
worse,
yeah.
Right? Those 30 companies. So let's talk about measuring the portfolio, or how we should look at, quote-unquote, the market.
Yeah, well, the S&P, if you look just strictly at the S&P, it's kind of a failed exercise, because if you go back, I'm looking at a chart that goes back to 1992. In any given year, the S&P was never the best performer. So really, if you're looking to maximize your performance, if you're looking at the S&P, that's the wrong way to look at it. So we look at the market in a lot of different ways. We look at it as domestic large companies, domestic small companies, international companies, emerging market companies, bonds, high-yield bonds. And the divergence in performance in these things sometimes can really be dramatic. If we look at...
Give me an example.
Well, let's say 2007... Emerging markets were up that year almost 40%. The S&P up only 5.5%.
That was 2007.
Yeah, so if you're focused on the S&P, you're missing all those other areas of the marketplace that are doing real well. And if you're measuring your portfolio against just strictly the S&P, you're not really giving yourself a fair look at how you're really doing out there.
Well, and the S&P is essentially a U.S. dominated portfolio.
Large companies.
It's a blend, right, of value and growth.
That's right.
But large companies, and they have some overseas. What, about 30% of the profits come from overseas?
That's right. Yeah, that's
so
about right.
It's a pretty narrow, even though it's 500 companies, you are getting diversification of stocks. You're not putting all your money in one stock, but you're still in the same category. And what you're getting at is, you might have in emerging markets, a great example, that's putting your money into companies that are in a small, what would be a good example of an emerging market?
Brazil. The so-called BRICS right now.
Okay, so you're talking about up and coming.
Yeah.
Not a huge developed, what I talk about are the Of course, I don't have it with me today. I left it in my other folder in my office. But the you don't have the top, the trillion-dollar club. These are not countries that are in the trillion-dollar GDP a year group.
Right.
They're smaller. They might have $200 or $300 billion of GDP.
Yeah, so it's a very, very, very different type of investment than the S&P, and that was in a very good year. The very next year, if we look at 2008, the S&P was down 37%, but another perfectly legitimate asset class that we use all the time, the Barclays Bond Index, up 5%. So if you're focusing just on the S&P 500, it's almost like only eating your steak and not having the peas and the mashed potatoes.
Oh, well, now you're hitting too close to home for me, Scott. That's a meal for me and, you know, a couple of pieces of broccoli and I'm good. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back to do more cooking and talking about what's happening in the market.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
On the break, Scott and I are talking about steaks. He got me talking. I went to Ray's the other day, which is a local butcher shop, and they're just fantastic over there. And I bought the whole strip. The way I buy it every time is I buy the whole loin, cut it up, have them cut it up. It's cheaper that way, and then it holds me for a while. And then I, you know, they'll take it out of the freezer. And I had this strip loin, New York strip steak, and it was just mouthwatering. So anyway, that and a couple pieces of broccoli, I'm good. Now,
that's good living.
We were talking about asset allocation and how to make sure you have your steak, your potato, your broccoli, your all those pieces. And that is really how people can achieve not only a reduced risk. You know, if you just invest your portfolio to act or mirror the S&P 500, you have the diversification. And you don't have the risk of buying one stock, but you still have what you just described there, the risk of being in just one asset class or one type of investment, and that has its own risk, right?
Sure. And I mean, we're talking about...
And that's what you saw in 2008.
Yeah, and the asset class we're talking about right now, the S&P was down 37 points. That's not really an asset class you want to be completely invested in. You pair that off with some bond exposure, for example, to mitigate risk, and the worst year the bond index has had in this chart that I'm looking at here is down maybe 3%. It's never going to return 50% or 40%, but it's not going to give you those negative double digit returns either.
Well, and there have been studies done, and I actually write about this in my book, shameless plug. Okay, and what I found was that historically there is a definite trend that says putting bonds in a portfolio will reduce the volatility.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a lot off of the return, but it does bring your risk level down. So when we look at building a portfolio, we need to look at not just, okay, we want to, hey, because sometimes people say, well, look, here's the rationale. I can buy the S&P 500 by going to, you know, whatever mutual fund and just buy a no-load fund, put all my money into that S&P 500 index, and I'm done.
Yeah.
And so that's the benchmark. And that's not really fair, is it? A fair way of looking at it.
No, that's not a fair way of looking at it at all because there are so many other opportunities out there. And if you're really focusing in that method, if you look at, say, 2000, 2001, 2002, S&P 500 returns negative 9, negative 12, negative 22.
47, what is that, 43, 44% cumulative?
Yeah, and so for you to get back to that area, you've got to get some massive returns.
Well, do the math, ladies and gentlemen. If you're down 50%, guess what you got to get for a return to get back even? 100%.
Right.
How long does that take? How often does that happen?
Yeah. So when you build your portfolio, you can't focus on one asset class. And when you measure your portfolio, you have to do the exact same thing. You can't focus on one asset class.
So really, to look at it, you've got to look at the risk you're taking, how much risk you're willing to accept. A lot of people aren't willing to take the kind of risk you're talking about there, Scott, where they're willing to take a 37% loss.
Yeah, but I think most folks take that risk. They just don't know they're taking that risk.
So it's what they don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's so important when people build these portfolios that they blend in, you know, the emerging market, the small cap, the smaller companies, the medium-sized companies, the larger companies, the dividend-paying companies.
Yeah, international.
The international, so important. And then bringing in some of the fixed income, bonds, preferred stocks, real estate investment trusts, the REITs,
yep.
All of these things. The reason we do that, ladies and gentlemen, is we bring in things that don't all march together. We want some chaos, right? We want some independent activity so that everything, you know, you don't want to have your entire portfolio all go the same way.
Right.
It needs to be mixed. You don't want to be all in the same sector. You know, the people that got crushed, I'm sure you remember, Scott, back when you talked about 2000 through 2002, the market in general went down that 40-some percent. But the people that really got hammered were who?
The growth investors.
And where were they investing? Technology.
Tech, right. That's
and
right.
They didn't. A lot of people had growth mutual funds, didn't even know that once you strip back the shell of that growth mutual fund, these fund managers were buying up technology companies, and it was all air.
Well, to that point, growth investing, number one returning sector, 95, 96, 97, 98, number three in 99, and then it was second to the last for really the next 7 years.
It got overbought.
Yeah, and what happened was everybody bought in at 98, and then they sold out when it was too late in 2002, and they put their hands up.
I had one time a client ask me to analyze a stock they were looking to buy, and I said, you know, we need to go with some funds and do some other stuff, but I looked at it, and it was a tech stock back in the early 2000s. And when I looked at it, I said, well, let's look at where their money's coming from. They were losing money like crazy. They were borrowing money, and they were issuing new stock.
Yeah.
And it just, their cash flow statement did not flow.
Yeah, that's
it made
not
no
revenue.
Sense. Not revenue.
Yeah.
Okay, that is all the time we have for today. I know that went fast, but be sure to tune in next time, and we will continue to talk about these fascinating things involving the market and your investing.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.